Star Wars, Heir to the Empire by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 2, side 2. Mold them, change them, recreate them in any image you chose. He cocked an eyebrow. And with them would come a very special bonus, because Leia Organa Solo is pregnant with twins. Cabalth inhaled sharply. Jedi twins? He hissed. They have the potential, or so my sources tell me. Thrawn smiled. Of course, what they ultimately became would be entirely up to you. Cabalth's eyes darted to Pelion, back to Thrawn. Slowly, deliberately, he stood up. Very well, Grand Admiral Thrawn, he said. In return for the Jedi, I will assist your forces. Take me to your ship. In time, Master Cabalth, Thrawn said, getting to his feet himself. First, we must go into the Emperor's mountain. This bargain is dependent on whether I find what I'm looking for there. Of course. Cabal's eyes flashed. Let us both hope, he said warningly, that you do. It took 7 hours of searching, through a mountain fortress much larger than Pelion had expected. But in the end they did indeed find the treasures Thrawn had hoped for, the cloaking shield, and that other small, almost trivial bit of technology. The door to the Grand Admiral's command room slid open. Settling himself, Pelion stepped inside. A word with you, Admiral? Certainly, Captain, Thrawn said from his seat in the center of the double display circle. Come in. Has there been any update from the Imperial Palace? No, sir, not since yesterday's, Pelion said as he walked to the edge of the outer circle, silently rehearsing one last time how he was going to say this. I can request one if you'd like. Probably unnecessary. Thrawn shook his head. It looks like the details of the Bimisari trip have been more or less settled. All we have to do is alert one of the commando groups. Team 8, I think. And we'll have our Jedi. Yes, sir. Pelion braced himself. Admiral, I have to tell you that I'm not convinced dealing with Cabalth is a good idea. To be perfectly honest, I don't think he's entirely sane. Thrawn cocked an eyebrow. Of course he's not sane. But then he's not Joris Cabalth either. Pelion felt his mouth fall open. What? Joris Cabalth is dead, Thrawn said. He was one of the 6 Jedi Masters aboard the Old Republic's outbound flight project. I don't know if you were highly enough placed back then to have known about it. I heard rumors, Pelion frowned, thinking back. Some sort of grand effort to extend the Old Republic's authority outside the galaxy, as I recall, launched just before the Clone Wars broke out. I never heard anything more about it. That's because there wasn't anything more to be heard, Thrawn said evenly. It was intercepted by a task force outside Old Republic space and destroyed. Pelion stared at him, a shiver running up his back. How do you know? Thrawn raised his eyebrows. Because I was the force's commander. Even at that early date, the Emperor recognized that the Jedi had to be exterminated. 6 Jedi Masters aboard the same ship was too good an opportunity to pass up. Pelion licked his lips. But then... Who is it we've brought aboard the Chimera? Thrawn finished the question for him. I should have thought that obvious. Joris Cabalth, Note the Tentea mispronunciation of the name Joris is a clone. Pelion stared at him. A clone? Certainly, Thrawn said. Created from a tissue sample, probably sometime just before the real Kabauth's death. Early in the war, in other words, Pelion said, swallowing hard. The early clones, or at least those the fleet had faced, had been highly unstable, both mentally and emotionally. Sometimes spectacularly so. And you deliberately brought this thing aboard my ship, he demanded. Would you rather we have brought back a full-fledged Dark Jedi? Thrawn asked coldly. A second Darth Vader, perhaps, with a sort of ambitions and power that might easily lead him to take over your ship? Count your blessings, Captain. At least a Dark Jedi would have been predictable, Pelion countered. Kabauth is predictable enough, Thrawn assured him. And for those times when he isn't... He waved a hand at the half-dozen frameworks encircling his command center. That's what the Isalimiri are for. Pelion grimaced. I still don't like it, Admiral. We can hardly protect the ship from him while at the same time having him coordinate the fleet's attacks. There's a degree of risk involved, Thrawn agreed. But risk has always been an inescapable part of warfare. In this case, the potential benefits far outweigh the potential dangers. Reluctantly, Pelion nodded. He didn't like it, was fairly certain he would never like it. But it was clear that Thrawn had made up his mind. Yes, sir, he muttered. You mentioned a message to Team 8. Will you be wanting me to transmit that? No, I'll handle it myself. Thrawn smiled sardonically. Their glorious leader and all that. You know how Nogri are. If there's nothing more... It was clearly a dismissal. No, sir, Pelion said. I'll be on the bridge if you require me. He turned to go. It will bring us victory, Captain, the Grand Admiral called softly after him. Quiet your fears and concentrate on that. If it doesn't kill us all. Yes, sir, Pelion said aloud, and left the room. Chapter 5. Han finished his report, sat back, and waited for the criticism to start. It was a very short wait. So, once again, your smuggler friends refused to commit themselves, Admiral Akbar said, sounding more than a little disgusted. His high-domed head bobbed twice in some indecipherable Calamarian gesture, his huge eyes blinking in time with the head movements. You'll recall that I disagreed with this idea all along, he added, waving a webbed hand toward Han's report case. Han glanced across the table at Leia. It's not a matter of commitment, Admiral, he told the other. It's a matter that most of them just don't see any real gain in switching from their current activities to straight shipping. Or else it's a lack of trust, a melodic alien voice put in. Could that be it? Han grimaced before he could stop himself. It's possible, he said, forcing himself to look at Borsk Felia. Possible? Felia's violet eyes widened, the fine cream-colored fur covering his body rippling slightly with the motion. It was a Bothan gesture of polite surprise, one which Felia seemed to use a lot. You said possible, Captain Solo? Han sighed quietly and gave up. Felia would only maneuver him into saying it some other way if he didn't. Some of the groups I've talked to don't trust us, he conceded. They think the offer might be some sort of trap to bring them out into the open. Because of me, of course, Akbar growled, his normal salmon color turning a little darker. Haven't you tired of retaking this same territory, Counselor Felia? Felia's eyes widened again, and for a moment he gazed silently at Akbar as the tension around the table quickly rose to the level of thick paste. They had never liked each other, Han knew, not from the day Felia had first brought his sizable faction of the Bothan race into the alliance after the Battle of Yavin. Right from the start, Felia had been jockeying for position and power, cutting deals wherever and whenever he could, and making it abundantly clear that he expected to be given a high position in the fledgling political system Mon Mothma was putting together. Akbar had considered such ambitions to be a dangerous waste of time and effort, particularly given the bleak situation the alliance was facing at the time, and with typical bluntness had made no effort to conceal that opinion. Given Akbar's reputation and subsequent successes, Han had little doubt that Felia would ultimately have been shunted off to some relatively unimportant government post in the New Republic, if it hadn't happened that the spies who discovered the existence and location of the Emperor's new Death Star had been a group of Felia's Bothans. Preoccupied at the time with more urgent matters, Han had never learned the details of how Felia had managed to parlay that serendipity into his current position on the council. And, to be perfectly honest, he wasn't sure he wanted to. "I merely seek to clarify the situation in my own mind, Admiral," Felia said at last into the heavy silence. "It's hardly worthwhile for us to continue sending a valuable man like Captain Solo out on these contact missions if each is pre-doomed to failure." "They're not pre-doomed to failure," Han cut in. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Leia give him a warning look. He ignored it. "The kind of smugglers we're looking for are conservative business people. They don't just jump into something new without thinking it through first. They'll come around." Felia shrugged, his fur again rippling. "And meanwhile, we expend a great deal of time and effort with nothing to show for it." "Look, you can't build up any..." A gentle, almost diffident tap of a hammer from the head of the table cut off the argument. "What the smugglers are waiting for," Mon Mothma said quietly, her stern gaze touching each of the others at the table in turn, "is the same thing the rest of the galaxy is waiting for, the formal reestablishment of the principles and law of the Old Republic. That is our first and primary task, counselors, to become the New Republic in fact as well as in name." Han caught Leia's eye, and this time he was the one who sent out the warning look. She grimaced, but nodded slightly and kept quiet. Mon Mothma let the silence linger a moment longer, again sending her gaze around the table. Han found himself studying her, noting the deepening lines in her face, the streaks of gray in her dark hair, the thinness rather than slenderness of her neck. She'd aged a lot since he'd first met her, back when the Alliance was trying to find a way out from under the shadow of the Empire's second Death Star. Ever since then, Mon Mothma had been right in the middle of this horrendous task of setting up a viable government, and the strain had clearly told on her. But despite what the years were doing to her face, her eyes still held the same quiet fire they'd possessed then. The same fire, or so the stories went, that had been there since her historic break with the Emperor's New Order and her founding of the Rebel Alliance. She was tough and smart and fully in control, and everyone present knew it. Her eyes finished their sweep and came to rest on Han. "Captain Solo, we thank you for your report, and, too, for your efforts. And with the captain's report, this meeting is adjourned." She tapped the hammer again and stood up. Han closed his report case and worked his way through the general confusion around to the other side of the table. "So," he said quietly, coming up behind Leia as she collected her own things. "Are we out of here?" "The sooner the better," she muttered back. "I just have to give these things to Winter." Han glanced around and lowered his voice a notch. "I take it things were going a little rough before they called me in." "No more than usual," she told him. "Thalia and Akbar had one of their polite little dogfights. This one over the fiasco at Obroa Sky that lost Elomen Force. With some more of Thalia's veiled suggestions that the job of Commander-in-Chief is too much for Akbar to handle. And then, of course, Mon Mothma..." "A word with you, Leia," Mon Mothma's voice came from over Han's shoulder. Han turned to face her, sensing Leia tense a little beside him as she did likewise.
"Yes?"
"I forgot to ask you earlier if you'd talk to Luke about going with you to Bimisari," Mon Mothma said. "Did he agree?"
"Yes,"
Leia nodded, throwing an apologetic look at Han.
"I'm sorry, Han. I didn't get a chance to tell you. The Bims sent a message yesterday asking that Luke be there with me for the talks."
"They did, huh?" A year ago, Han reflected, he would probably have been furious at having a painstakingly crafted schedule flipped at the last minute like this. Leia's diplomatic patience must be starting to rub off on him. Either that, or he was just getting soft. "They give any reasons?"
"The Bims are rather hero-oriented," Mon Mothma said before Leia could answer, her eyes searching Han's face.
Probably trying to figure out just how mad he was about the change in plans. "And Luke's part in the Battle of Endor is rather well known."
"Yeah, I'd heard that," Han said, trying not to be too sarcastic.
He had no particular quarrel with Luke's position in the New Republic's pantheon of heroes. The kid had certainly earned it. But if having Jedi around to brag about was so important to Mon Mothma, then she ought to be letting Leia get on with her own studies instead of foisting all this extra diplomatic work on her. As it was, he would bet on an ambitious snail to make full Jedi before she did. Leia found his hand, squeezed it. He squeezed back to show that he wasn't mad, though she probably already knew that.
"We'd better get going," she told Mon Mothma, using her grip on Han's hand to start steering him away from the table. "We still have to collect our droids before we leave."
"Have a good trip," Mon Mothma said gravely, "and good luck." "The droids are already on the Falcon," Han told Leia as they wove their way around the various conversations that had sprung up between the counselors and staff members. "Chewie got them aboard while I came here."
"I know," Leia murmured.
"Right," Han said, and left it at that. She squeezed his hand again.
"It'll be all right, Han. You, me, and Luke together again. It'll be just like old times."
"Sure," Han said. Sitting around with a group of half-furred, half-size aliens, listening to 3PO's precise voice all day as he translated back and forth, trying to penetrate yet another alien psychology to figure out what exactly it would take to get them to join the New Republic.
"Sure," he repeated with a sigh. "Just exactly like old times."
Chapter 6. The waving alien trees shied back like some sort of huge tentacles from the landing area, and with the barest of bumps, Han set the Millennium Falcon down on the uneven ground.
"Well, here we are," he announced to no one in particular.
"Bimisari, fur and moving plants a specialty."
"None of that," Leia warned him, unstrapping from the seat behind him, and running through the Jedi relaxation techniques Luke had taught her. Political dealings with people she knew were relatively easy for her. Diplomatic missions with unfamiliar alien races were something else entirely. "You'll do fine," Luke said from beside her, reaching over to squeeze her arm. Han half-turned. "I wish you two wouldn't do that," he complained. "It's like listening to half a conversation." "Sorry," Luke apologized, climbing out of his seat and stooping to peer out the Falcon's nose window. "Looks like our reception committee coming. I'll go get 3PO ready." "We'll be there in a minute," Leia called after him. "You ready, Han?" "Yeah," Han told her, adjusting his blaster in his holster. "Last chance to change your mind, Chewie." Leia strained her ears as Chewbacca growled out a curt reply. Even after all these years, she still couldn't understand him nearly as well as Han could. Some subtle level of harmonics in the Wookiee's voice, apparently, that she had trouble picking up. But if some of the words were less than distinct, the overall meaning came through crystal clear. "Oh, come on," Han urged. "You've been fawned over before. Remember that big awards thing back at the Yavin base? I didn't hear you complaining then." "It's all right, Han," Leia put in over Chewbacca's response. "If he wants to stay aboard with R2 and work on the stabilizers, that's fine. The Bims won't be offended." Han looked out the nose window at the approaching delegation. "I wasn't worried about offending them," he muttered. "I just thought it'd be nice to have a little extra backup along, just in case." Leia smiled and patted his arm. "The Bims are very friendly people," she assured him. "There won't be any trouble." "I've heard that before," Han said dryly, pulling a comlink from a small storage compartment beside his seat. He started to clip it to his belt, changed direction in mid-motion, and fastened it to his collar instead. "Looks good there," Leia said. "Are you going to put your old general's insignia on your belt now?" He made a face at her. "Very funny. With the comlink here, all I have to do is casually switch it on, and I'll be able to talk to Chewie without being obvious about it." "Ah," Leia nodded. "It was a good idea, at that. Sounds like you've been spending too much time with Lieutenant Page and his commandos." "I've been spending too much time sitting in on council meetings," he countered, sliding out of his seat and standing up. "After 4 years of watching political infighting, you learn the occasional value of subtlety. Come on, Chewie, we'll need you to lock up behind us." Luke and 3PO were waiting when they got to the hatchway. "Ready?" Luke asked. "Ready," Leia said, taking a deep breath. With a hiss of released air seal, the hatchway opened, and together they walked down the ramp to where the yellow-clad, half-furred creatures waited. The arrival ceremony was short, and for the most part unintelligible, though 3PO did his best to keep up a running translation of the five-part harmony the whole thing seemed to have been written in. The song Welcome ended, and two of the Bims stepped forward, one of them continuing the melody, while the other held up a small electronic device. "He offers greetings to distinguished visitor, Counselor Leia Organa Solo," 3PO said, "and hopes your discussions with the law elders will be fruitful. He also requests that Captain Solo return his weapon to the ship." The droid said it so matter-of-factly that it took a second for the words to penetrate. "What was that last?" Leia asked. "Captain Solo must leave his weapon aboard the ship," 3PO repeated. "Weapons of violence are not permitted within the city. There are no exceptions." "Terrific," Han murmured into her ear. "You didn't tell me this one was coming." "I didn't know this one was coming," Leia countered quietly, giving the two Bims a reassuring smile. "Doesn't look like we've got any choice." Diplomacy, Han growled, making a curse out of the word. Unfastening his gun belt, he wrapped it carefully around the holstered blaster and set the package up inside the hatchway. Happy? Aren't I always? Leia nodded to 3PO. Tell them we're ready. The droid translated. Stepping aside, the two Bims gestured back the way they'd come. They were perhaps 20 meters from the Falcon, with the sounds of Chewbacca sealing the hatchway coming from behind them, when something abruptly occurred to Leia. Luke, she murmured. Yes, I know, he murmured back. Maybe they figure it's just part of the proper Jedi's outfit. Or else their weapons detector doesn't read lightsabers, Han put in quietly from Leia's other side. Either way, what they don't know won't hurt them. I hope so, Leia said, forcing down her reflexive diplomatic misgivings. After all, if the Bims themselves hadn't objected to it. Good skies! Would you look at that crowd? They were waiting where the path exited the trees. Hundreds of Bims, standing perhaps 20 deep on both sides of the way, all clothed in the same tooled yellow. The official reception committee shifted to single file and started down the gauntlet without giving the crowd a second glance. Bracing herself, Leia followed. It was a little strange, but not nearly as uncomfortable as she'd feared it would be. Each Bim reached out a hand as she passed, touching her with a feathery lightness on shoulder, or head, or arm, or back. It was all done in complete silence and complete order, with the aura of perfect civilization about it. Still, she was glad that Chewbacca had decided not to come. He hated, rather violently, being pawed by strangers. They passed through the crowd, and the Bim walking nearest Leia sang something. He says the Tower of Law is just ahead, 3PO translated. It's the location of their planetary council. Leia peered over the heads of the leading Bims. There, obviously, was the Tower of Law. And next to it, 3PO, ask what that thing is beside it, she instructed the droid. That building that looks like a three-level dome with the sides and most of the roof cut away. The droid sang, and the Bim replied. It's the city's main marketplace, 3PO told her. He says they prefer the open air whenever possible. That roof probably stretches to cover more of the dome framework when the weather's bad, Han added from behind her. I've seen that design in a few other places. He says that perhaps you can be given a tour of the facility before you leave, 3PO added. Sounds great, Han said. Wonderful place to pick up souvenirs. Quiet, Leia warned, or you can wait in the Falcon with Chewie. The Bimisari Tower of Law was fairly modest, as planetary council meeting places went, topping the three-level marketplace beside it by only a couple of floors. Inside, they were led to a large room on the ground floor, where, framed by huge tapestries covering the walls, another group of Bims waited. Three of them stood and sang as Leia entered. They add their greetings to those given you at the landing area, Princess Leia, 3PO translated. They apologize, however, for the fact that the talks will not be able to begin quite yet. It appears that their chief negotiator became ill just moments ago. Oh, Leia said, taken slightly aback. Please express our sympathies and ask if there's anything we can do to help. They thank you, 3PO said after another exchange of songs. But they assure you that will not be necessary. There is no danger to him, merely inconvenience. The droid hesitated. I really don't think you should inquire further, Your Highness, he added a bit delicately. The complaint appears to be of a rather personal nature. I understand, Leia said gravely, suppressing a smile at the prim tone of the droid's voice. Well, in that case, I suppose we might as well return to the Falcon until he feels ready to continue. The droid translated, and one of their escorts stepped forward and sang something in reply. He offers an alternative, Your Highness, that he would be eager to conduct you on a tour of the marketplace while you wait. Leia glanced at Han and Luke. Any objections? The Bim sang something else. He further suggests that Master Luke and Captain Solo might find something to interest them in the tower's upper chambers, 3PO said. Apparently, there are relics there dating from the middle era of the Old Republic. A quiet alarm went off in the back of Leia's mind. Were the Bims trying to split them up? Luke and Han might like the market, too, she said cautiously. There was another exchange of arias. He says they would find it excessively dull, 3PO told her. Frankly, if it's anything like marketplaces I've seen... I like marketplaces, Han cut him off brusquely, his voice dark with suspicion. I like them a lot. Leia looked at her brother. What do you think? Luke's eyes swept the Bims, measuring them, she knew, with all of his Jedi insight. I don't see what danger they could be, he said slowly. I don't sense any real duplicity in them. Nothing beyond that of normal politics, anyway. Leia nodded, her tension easing a little. Normal politics. Yes, that was probably all it was. The Bim probably just wanted the chance to privately bend her ear on behalf of his particular viewpoint before the talks got started in earnest. In that case, she said, inclining her head to the Bim, we accept. The marketplace has been in this same spot for over 200 years, 3PO translated, as Han and Leia followed their host up the gentle ramp between the second and third levels of the open dome structure. Though not in this exact form, of course. The Tower of Law, in fact, was built here precisely because it was already a common crossroads. Hasn't changed much, has it? Han commented, pressing close to Leia to keep them from getting run down by a particularly determined batch of shoppers. He'd seen a lot of marketplaces on a lot of different planets, but seldom one so crowded. Crowded with more than just locals, too. Scattered throughout the sea of yellow-clad Bims, don't they ever wear any other color? He could see several other humans, a pair of Baradas, an Ishi Tib, a group of Yusumi, and something that looked vaguely like a Paeonid. You can see why this place is worth getting into the New Republic, Leia murmured to him. I guess so, Han conceded, stepping to one of the booths and looking at the metalware displayed there. The owner-operator sang something toward him, gesturing to a set of carving knives. No thanks, Han told him, moving back. The Bim continued to jabber at him, his gestures becoming sharper. 3PO, will you have our host tell him that we're not interested? He called to the droid. There was no response. 3PO, he repeated, looking around. 3PO was staring off into the crowd. Hey, Goldenrod, he snapped. I'm talking to you. 3PO spun back. I'm terribly sorry, Captain Solo, he apologized. But our host seems to have disappeared. What do you mean, disappeared? Han demanded, looking around. Their particular Bim, he remembered, had worn a set of shiny pins on his shoulders. Pins that were nowhere to be seen. How could he just disappear? Beside him, Leia gripped his hand. I've got a bad feeling about this, she said tightly. Let's get back to the tower. Yeah, Han agreed. Come on, 3PO. Don't get lost. Shifting his grip on Leia's hand, he turned and froze. A few meters away, islands in the churning sea of yellow, three aliens stood facing them. short aliens, not much taller than the Bims, with steel-gray skin, large dark eyes, and protruding jaws. And, held ready in their hands, Stokely sticks. "We've got trouble," he murmured to Leia, turning his head slowly to look around, hoping desperately that those three were all there were. They weren't. There were at least eight more, arrayed in a rough circle 10 meters across. A circle with Han, Leia, and 3PO at its center. "Han," Leia said urgently. "I see them," he muttered. "We're in trouble, sweetheart." He sensed her glance behind them. "Who are they?" she breathed. "I don't know. Never seen anything like them before, but they're not kidding around. Those things are called Stokely sticks. Shoot a spray net mist 200 meters with enough shock stun juice to take down a good-sized Gundark." Abruptly, Han noticed that he and Leia had moved, instinctively backing away from the nearest part of the alien circle. He glanced over his shoulder. "They're herding us toward the down ramp," he told her. "Must be trying to take us without stirring up the crowd." "We're doomed," 3PO moaned. Leia gripped Han's hand. "What are we going to do?" "Let's see how closely they're paying attention." Trying to watch all the aliens at once, Han casually reached his free hand toward the comlink attached to his collar. The nearest alien lifted his Stokely stick warningly. Han froze, slowly lowered the hand again. "So much for that idea," he muttered. "I think it's time to pull in the welcome mat. Better give Luke a shout." "He can't help us." Han glanced down at her, at her glazed eyes and pinched face. "Why not?" he demanded, stomach tightening. She sighed just audibly. "They've got him, too." Chapter 7. It was more a feeling than anything approaching an actual word, but it echoed through Luke's mind as clearly as if he'd heard it shouted. "Help!" He spun around, the ancient tapestry he'd been studying forgotten as his Jedi senses flared into combat readiness. Around him, the large top-floor tower room was as it had been a minute earlier, deserted except for a handful of Bims strolling among the huge wall tapestries and relic cases. No danger here, at least nothing immediate. "What is it?" he sent back, starting for the next room and the staircase leading down. He caught a quick vision from Leia's mind, a picture of alien figures and a vivid impression of a contracting noose. "Hang on," he told her. "I'm coming." All but running now, he ducked through the doorway to the staircase room, grabbing the jamb to help with his turn, and braked to an abrupt halt. Standing between him and the stairway was a loose semicircle of seven silent gray figures. Luke froze, his hand still uselessly gripping the door jamb, half a galaxy away from the lightsaber on his belt. He had no idea what the sticks were his assailants were pointing at him, but he had no desire to find out the hard way, not unless he absolutely had to. "What do you want?" he asked aloud. The alien in the center of the semicircle, the leader, Luke guessed, gestured with his stick. Luke glanced over his shoulder into the room he'd just left. "You want me to go back in there?" he asked. The leader gestured again, and this time Luke saw it, the small, almost insignificant tactical error. "All right," he said as soothingly as possible. "No problem." Keeping his eyes on the aliens and his hands away from his lightsaber, he began to back up. They herded him steadily back across the room toward another archway, and a room he hadn't gotten to before Leia's emergency call had come. "If you'd just tell me what you want, I'm sure we could come to some sort of agreement," Luke suggested as he walked. Faint scuffling sounds told him that there were still some Bims wandering around, presumably the reason the aliens hadn't already attacked. I would hope we could at least talk about it. There's no particular reason why any of you has to be hurt. Reflexively, the leader's left thumb moved. Not much, but Luke was watching, and it was enough. A thumb trigger, then. If you have some business with me, I'm willing to talk, he continued. You don't need my friends in the marketplace for that. He was almost to the archway now. A couple more steps to go. If they'd just hold off shooting him that long. And then he was there, with the carved stone looming over him. Nowhere, he asked, forcing his muscles to relax. This was it. Again, the leader gestured with his stick. And midway through the motion, for a single instant, the weapon was pointed not at Luke, but at two of his own companions. And reaching out through the force, Luke triggered the thumb switch. There was a loud, sharp hiss as the stick bucked in its owner's hands, and what looked like a fine spray shot out the end. Luke didn't wait to see what exactly the spray did. The maneuver had bought him maybe a half second of confusion, and he couldn't afford to waste any of it. Throwing himself back and to the side, he did a flip into the room behind him, angling to get to the slight protection afforded by the wall beside the doorway. He just barely made it. Even as he cleared the archway, there was a stuttering salvo of sharp hisses, and as he flipped back to his feet, he saw that the door jamb had grown strange, semi-solid tendrils of some thin, translucent material. Another tendril shot through the doorway as he hastily backed farther away, sweeping in a spiral curve that seemed to turn from fine mist to liquid stream to solid cylinder even as it curved. His lightsaber was in his hand now, igniting with a snap hiss of its own. They'd be through that doorway in seconds, he knew, all efforts at subtlety abandoned. And when they came, he clenched his teeth, a memory of his brief skiff battle encounter with Boba Fett flashing through his mind. Wrapped in the bounty hunter's smart rope, he'd escaped only by snapping the cable with a deflected blaster shot. But here, there would be no blasters to try that trick with. For that matter, he wasn't absolutely sure what his lightsaber could do directly against the sprays. It would be like trying to cut through a rope that was continually recreating itself. Or rather, like trying to cut it off. He could hear their footsteps now, sprinting toward his room, even as the spiraling tendril sweeping the doorway made sure he stayed too far back to ambush them as they came through it. A standard military technique, played out with the kind of precision that showed he wasn't dealing with amateurs. He raised the lightsaber to on-guard position, risking a quick look around. The room was decorated like all the others he'd seen on this floor, with ancient wall tapestries and other relics. This book is continued on cassette number 3, side 1.